In the garage of Dr. Frank Conrad, on November 2nd, 1920, the first scheduled pre-advertised radio program in the United States went on the air. Station KDKA was broadcasting returns of the presidential race on the evening of Election Day. From a humble beginning in a Pittsburgh garage to the sumptuous studios of the national radio networks in New York, Chicago, and Hollywood, these are the years we refer to as the golden age of radio.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word in
single. Al Kemp, on the air for Griffin.
It's time to shine, shiny shoes and wear.
Tony Home Permanent presents
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you tonight by Burritt Mutual Savings Banks and WTIC. And now your host, Dick Bertel.
Good evening, and with me once again is the man with 2,500 hours of old-time radio memories on tape, Ed Corcoran. Ed, we have a special guest tonight, don't we?
Yes, a guest that I'm sure everybody in the country knows by sight and by sound. I speak of the very great and very lovely, by the way, Fran Allison.
Fran, it's awfully nice to have you with us on the program.
Oh, thank you, Dick. I'm just delighted to be here.
And we want to share in your radio and your television career. Certainly everyone knows you from Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. I was just trying to think back to the first time that I saw that show, which would have to be when the cable was connected between New York and and Chicago. That
it
was
would have been the very first part of 49.
That's when I first fell in love with you. You might
bless your
probably
heart.
Didn't know that until this moment. But but Fran, we want to talk not only about Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, but about your marvelous radio career, which takes us all the way back to the early days in Iowa. Where and when?
Well, when I left after 2 years of college, I went to teach school, and I did teach school for 4 years. And my brother is a musician and was at that time with an orchestra, which was broadcasting from Waterloo, Iowa, over station WMT. And they asked me to sing on one of the of their programs, and I met the program director of the station. So he said, well, we'd just love to have you come and work on the station and do some programs. And if ever there was a misnomer, it was the term which they applied to a program for which one was paid nothing. It was called a sustaining program. So finally I said to Mr. Dumont, I said, Joe, I'll tell you, I can no longer sustain myself with this kind of remuneration. We have to put it on a paying basis. So he said, well, Fran, let me see what I can work out. Now, we have a half hour in the morning from 8 to 8:30, and I'll give you that half hour, and Lou Webb will play piano for you, and you can sing songs, and then you'll read. Here are the spot announcements that ordinarily would go in that time. You will be responsible for these. If they expire, you'll have to see that they're renewed, and hopefully you'll go out and get new business. And I said, well, that doesn't really sound too tough at all. And he said, and you'll write the spots, too. I said, well, I can do that. I know I can do that. And I said, now, how much do I get for this? He said, $10 a week and 10% commission. I finally ran that up with commission and all to the magnificent sum of about between $35 and $40 a week.
Good for you.
And the manager of the station thought that was much too much money to be paying a lady, so he put me on a flat basis of $30. So I then didn't work quite as hard as I had worked before.
That's usually what results.
But anyway, I was with that station for 4 years, and they suddenly decided at home, and my town was a town of, I think it was about 1,400, And they decided to have a reunion of all the people who had graduated from high school there. And I got my notice of the event along with a request to sing at the banquet. And Mother said, "You do it, Francis, or they'll think you're stuck up." So I did it. And the speaker of the evening was a wonderful man, Mr. Bennett Chapel, and he was vice president of the American Rolling Mills in Ohio and was, in the old-time radio, the Armco Ironmaster. Ed, you should remember him. So he came to the radio station the next day and told me that he had some very good friends at NBC in Chicago and he would like to bring me to their attention. And so I thanked him very much, and I should not have been surprised never to have heard any more. And within a week, we had a call from NBC asking if I had any kind of audition material which I could send in. Then they asked if I could come in person, and I did, and I auditioned. And within a week, I got an offer as a staff soloist. And now, along with, I was doing really not too much singing of a ballad variety at that time. I was doing more selling, and Aunt Fanny had come into the picture. She arrived by accident.
Tell people that this is the Aunt Fanny of the Breakfast Club.
Of the Breakfast Club. Dominguez Breakfast Club. But she first saw the light of day in Waterloo, Iowa. And there was, no longer is there, but there was, in Waterloo, Iowa, the Galloway Implement Company, which was the largest company selling directly to farmers. And radio had long been trying to get the Galloway Company into the advertising field by way of radio to no avail. And finally, one of the announcers at the station said to me, "You know, I'll bet they'd buy Aunt Fanny." I said, "Who's she?" Because I forgot that I was Aunt Fanny 2 years before, just by accident, once on a program. And I said, "Oh, my gosh, maybe they would." So we together drummed up an idea whereby we'd have a five-minute program. On this five, you never saw such a five-minute program, such a busy thing in your whole life. I first came on, and I would tell what I hopefully thought was a funny story, and then I would read, you know, people are just, why does anybody want to hear their birthday on radio? Have you ever figured that out?
No, I haven't.
And their wedding anniversary, and all like that. Well, I'd read a whole string of names, and then I would pick up their actual commercial, and I would translate it into Aunt Fannyism. Now I sold cream separators, the little bench model and the little Daisy Wonder, and I sold pump jacks and harrows. I wouldn't have known one if I fell over them, you know. Manure spreaders, everything like that. And so farmers would come out to the company store, and one of the, you know, salespeople would come up and say, "Could we help you?" Said, "No," said, "I'm looking around for Aunt Fanny." Well, she's not here now. She's down at the radio station. So down they'd come to the radio station, and someone would come in and say, "There's somebody out to see you." So I'd go out, and there they'd be in their denim jackets and big high rubber boots. They'd say, "You Aunt Fanny?" Say, "Yes, sir, I am." Say, "George, I never thought you'd look like that."
That's a great story. You arrived in Chicago to work as a staff soloist at NBC.
Right.
What is a staff soloist? What function do they perform at the station?
Everything but sweep out, and that's the truth. This was before AFTRA, and when I came there, I did 17 shows during the week. I had one day off. Ostensibly, I had one day off. But if on that day off somebody else didn't show up and they called me and I wasn't available, I would get docked for a day. Mm. Well, I even finally, after Aunt Fanny kind of came into the being, they had a half an hour on Sunday afternoon on the Red Network. they had all these acts that they had to use some way or other, and they had a whole lot of musicians sitting around who should be playing, and so they dragged them into the act, too. And we had this big thing called Sunday Dinner at Aunt Fanny's, in which I could make use of a big orchestra, a boy singer, a girl singer, any group that wasn't busy that day, and I provided the script for it, did the whole works. Then we got down to the point where one we do about six shows a week. I didn't really mind that I was doing 16. I would rather have done it than not do anything at all.
But now, you were a singer, so would you be on a popular music show on one day?
Yes,
and a
yes.
Semi-classical
well, no,
show
actually,
on another?
The extra shows were the musical shows, which might be drummed up within 5 minutes, you know. Or if it was an extremely dull day, they did an audition for Fitch. You remember that? But my real assignments were, 1 week I did Breakfast Club, the next week I did Club Matinee. That was a great experience to work with Ransom Sherman, one of the dearest, most wonderful men. And then Gary Moore came in, and I worked
That's
Gary
right.
Moore's first show at NBC.
Now, this is at the time you were working for NBC, and the Breakfast mm-hmm. Club mm-hmm. was on the Blue Network.
Well, yes, but they were one and the same thing at that. They just had the red and blue,
red and blue
thing.
Yes.
Right.
And then, as I say, I was with that sort of operation for about 2.5 years, and then I went over to Columbia, and I was with CBS for 4 years. And then I went to the coast. My husband was in the war, and he was stationed on the coast, and I left Chicago, was away for about a year. And when I came back as, we say freelance, I came back out of work.
That's right,
actually
that's
what,
the word,
what
freelance.
The situation was. And a friend of mine, Nancy Martin, was on Breakfast Club at that time, and she said, oh, Franny, come on down. Said, Donna, just love to see you. So I went down, and I saw everybody. But this time now, they're going great guns, and they have an audience, you know. And he said, why don't you be in the audience? And he says, why don't I interview you as Aunt Fanny? He said, would you do it? And I said, sure. So I did, and when we got through, he said, my gosh, he said, Fran, I'd forgotten how darn funny she was. Maybe we can work out something. And we did. And so I went back to work. First, I went back to work 2 days a week. Then it got up to 3 days a week. And then I had all kinds of good friends who were doing dramatized commercials, you know. And they'd schedule me in on doing this commercial or that. I did a lot of them. And then they decided to do a revival of Clara Lou and M. And I had listened to them when I was teaching school, and they used to just kill me. I thought they were so funny. I could have done any one of the three voices. But Clara was the one I really wanted to do and did, and I got the part. And we did a series of 39 of them.
Now, tell me about Clara. What sort of a character was she?
Well, she was a great big lady, you know, and just she had utterly devoid of a sense of humor. Just didn't have any. She was funny because she was so square about
yeah.
things. And so we had wanted to have publicity pictures made. And now Lou had a little tiny voice, and she was a little lady, but a little kind of a round lady. And M was kind of thin and tall. She looked pretty much like M. And so now it came to me, and we'd always talked about because Claire was always going to go on a diet, you know. And so they got some awful-looking house dresses for us to put on. And so they got this one for me. They got a big size. Well, they could have taken my head, and they could have whirled me around in it, you know, six times. I wouldn't have even touched a seam. So they said, we have to fix that up. So they got some blankets, and they kind of draped me in blankets. Then I put this dress on. So here I am, and, of course, they're short sleeves. Here's the little skinny arms. It was the worst-looking picture you ever saw in your life. I don't think that show really did very well.
We'll talk more with Fran Allison right after this.
Get smile power, the kind of confident, contented countenance that comes from cash. Salted away cash in Barrett Mutual Savings Bank at the highest legal savings bank interest rate. And you don't need a lot of money to do it. You can save a little. It's the constant, patient, every payday habit of saving that really counts. At the Big B, we love your small deposits. We know they grow for you and for us. Result, we will both have smile power. Plus, we help with our high interest rates paid to you on your savings. Barrett Mutual Savings Bank. Deposits insured to $20,000 by FDIC.
Ed, do you think it might be possible to work in Clara Lou and M? I know you have a part of it in your series.
Yeah, this is a very hard show to come by, even though it was on for many years. And a friend of mine from Chicago sent me a couple of shows. And hopefully, these are the latter series, and we might hear Miss Allison actually appearing on this one day.
All right, let's go.
Pillsbury Flour Mills Company, millers of Pillsbury's best in rich flour, have the pleasure of presenting that delightful trio of female zanies, Clara.
Well, hello, girls. How are you?
Lou.
Just fine, Clara. Just fine.
And Em.
Well, good night, girls. Here we come again.
Yes.
Just a minute, girls. Take it easy. I know you're all thrilled and raring to go, but you'll have to hold back long enough to let me tell your thousands of fans something about you. You see, ladies, while it is important that you use the right flour in all your baking, the Pillsbury people decided it was equally important during these hectic war times that you should have plenty of hearty laughs and chuckles to help lighten your day. And that's why Pillsbury is bringing your old favorite, Clara Lou and M, back on the air every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, just to help you relax and forget your kids. So right now, drop whatever you're doing. I promise you, you'll be in stitches in a jiffy.
Woo-hoo! Girls, come here, quick.
Well, of all people, Clara Roach is actually upset. She just yoo-hooed loudly out the back door for Lou and Em to come quick. Well, if I know the girls, they won't let Clara down. They'll... Oh, yes, I know it. Here comes Em. She's hurrying in through Clara's kitchen door, she says.
Clara, honey, what's the matter? You ain't sick, are you?
No, Em, I ain't sick. Where's Lou?
Well, she was right behind me. Oh, here she is.
What's wrong with you?
Clara? Oh, girls, I've had a terrible shock. The awful thing has happened to me.
Oh, Clara, are you all right? You're acting awfully funny.
Look on that pantry shelf. Up there, up on the top shelf.
Oh, how nice of me. Oh, Clara, you're such a lovely housekeeper.
No, look up on the top shelf. Can't you see it?
Oh, a lot of jam and jelly and a roaster and a
sack
of sugar. A sack of sugar?
A 10-pound sack of sugar. Em, I never knew I had it. I'm as innocent as a baby.
Oh, Clara, where did you get that? I stood right beside you that day we went to school. Heard you give your weight. And you said 4 pounds of sugar.
I know it. And I give my weight right, too, didn't I, Em?
Yes. I was very innocent.
Well, that ought to prove to them that I never lied about my sugar if I give them the right weight.
Well, Clara, how did you come by so much extra sugar?
Lou, I don't know. About 20 minutes ago, I started to clean off that shelf, and I seen this thing sitting there. Well, I should have dropped dead. I never bought it. I never put it there. I never even knew I had it.
Oh, why, Clara. Oh, honey, this is awful. Why, the FBI? Oh, my. They, what is it? $10,000 fine and 2 years in prison?
Oh, my, Clara Roach. That makes you just like a criminal.
Oh, I know it does. I can't even take it and dump it in the garbage can. I might get caught.
Well, Clara, you ought to put your hat on and go right down to your ration board and lay your 10
pounds... Now, Em, I ain't going to do it. I am as innocent, and I ain't going down there and get mixed up with the ration board.
Yeah, FBI would get you.
I wish you'd quit bringing up the FBI, Em. After all, I ain't did anything.
No.
I'll tell you one way I thought of that I could get rid of it. Why don't I just take it and divide it up? Give you 3 pounds, Lou, and Em, you take 3/4.
Oh, no. Oh, Clara, I'd be a criminal, too, then. Oh, I don't think I'd ought to touch it.
Well, then you take it, Em. You've got a big family.
Oh, I won't need it, Clara. I'm trying all the time to work out receipts that don't use no sugar. I'm working on a cake.
Em, you ain't going to go back to that eggless, milkless, butterless cake, are you?
Go back to it? Why, Clara, I never left it. Oh, that's a delicious cake. That was the finest thing Mama got out of the last war. That receipt for eggless, milkless, butterless cake.
Oh, honey, do you think so, Em? I never really cared much for it.
Check full of raisins and spices. Of course, you need plenty of spices in that cake to make it taste.
I've been afraid, though, you'd start making it eggless, milkless, butterless, sugarless.
I am.
Sugarless? Oh, am.
I am. I'm working on an eggless, milkless, butterless, sugarless honey cake.
Oh, am. The honey ought to be good in it.
Yeah, lovely flavor. I'm going to keep bees this summer for that cake.
What? What?
Yeah. Didn't you see my notice? I packed up on the bulletin board a lot.
Oh, I certainly never.
What'd the sign say?
Said, notice, any of the ladies seeing a swarm, please notify Emma Kruger day or night.
Well, honestly, I just feel like I can't stand it. Here I am with 10 pounds of sugar on my hands, and you've got to keep bees in the backyard to come over here and spend all day setting in my flowers.
I don't think we can stop them from going over to your side to eat, Clara.
A bee hasn't got a brain. You couldn't train it.
Oh, Lou, they got wonderful little brains, but I don't think you can tell them nothing.
No, but you're right, Em. Bees is famous for their brains.
Oh, I sure hope I get to see our little queen someday.
Well, Em, how do you get into the hive to get the honey?
Oh, you gotta get a big hat, drape a veil, a mosquito netting. I believe I can make friends with a bee. They get to know you and love you.
Just like a dog, huh?
Yeah, but I'm the one they'll be crazy over. I'm the hand that feeds them.
That's right, Clara. The bees will probably follow you all over the yard.
Oh, Clara, they'll just perch all over you. Ooh.
My husband will sure be tickled when he finds out the yard's going to be full of bees this summer.
Why? Don't Charlie like bees either?
Oh, I make him awful mad. Oh, and listen, girls, whatever you do, don't leave it get out to Charlie about that 10 pounds of sugar.
Well, Clara, we've got to help you out of it if we can. If you go to jail, I feel
I ain't going to jail. Not even if I have to live the rest of the war with 10 pounds of sugar buried in my heart.
We'll return to our guest, Fran Allison, right after this.
Barrett Mutual Savings Bank asks you this question. Why should you save? Barrett Mutual Savings Bank will also try to answer. The reasons for saving are almost endless. One, it can open the door to your new home. Two, it can give you the means to new furniture, a new car, a boat, a vacation. Three, it can help send your children to college. Four, it can give you that glorious feeling of independence and prosperity. Don't ever feel that you have to have large amounts to save. At Barrett, deposits as small as $1 are welcome, really welcome. Start now and save for all these reasons and perhaps some of your own. If you can't save a lot, save a little. At Barrett Mutual Savings Bank, where deposits are safe and earn good dividends. Start your account tomorrow.
Member FDIC. You're listening to The Golden Age of Radio on WTIC in Hartford. Tonight's program is brought to you by Barrett Mutual Savings Bank and WTIC.
And here is your toastmaster of the Breakfast Club, Don McNeil.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, New Year. We woke up bright and early, just a holiday New Year.
The Breakfast Club, keep on smiling out there. The Breakfast Club.
Fran, I do want to talk to you specifically about the Breakfast Club, because I think that for those of us in the East, we best remember Aunt Fanny on this show. What was the physical setup?
Well, just a big studio, a large orchestra, always a boy and girl singer. Don had a table at which he sat, and when I would work as Aunt Fanny, I would come in and sit with him. And a good bit of the popularity and probably one a reason for its longevity was the audience itself, because they contributed so much either by being in the studio during a broadcast or by the wonderful letters which they wrote. And then there were many things about the show which were so completely wholesome and so very family. There was the moment of silent prayer, which was perhaps I would say the most outstanding thing, the thing about which people remark the most.
That's right.
Mothers got their husbands off to work, their children off to school by the sections of the program. It was first call to breakfast, second call to breakfast, third call was march time, and the fourth call to breakfast. And if they weren't out the door by the fourth call, they were going to be late for school or late for work. Or anyway, it just was a part of family life.
And what was the relationship between Aunt Fanny and Don McNeil? Was it an ad-lib situation?
Oh, yes.
Did you plan a situation?
As Aunt Fanny's secretary, I would make little notes for Don, hoping he would read them. Rarely did he do that. But it worked out well. He loved Aunt Fanny.
Did Aunt Fanny ever use the telephone, for example?
Oh, all the time. Really, just ring her up four times backward and then reverse it. And Nettie used to call. Nettie. You never met Nettie, did you?
No, as a matter of fact, I didn't, Aunt Fanny.
Nettie Kennicott. Nettie and Ed Kennicott and their daughter, Pearl. Pearl's getting up there in years now. Nettie'd just give anything if she could see her married to a good man. She'd give anything to see her married right now. Pearl's a horrible nearsighted, too. She always falling down and breaking her glasses, you know. It's just miserable. She here just the last week, you know, she's a horrible singer. But they don't have too many in the choir, and so Pearl's in the choir, and as I say, she doesn't have her glasses two-thirds of the time, and so she was singing the wrong notes, and the director, the new fellow's come from the city that's directing the choir now, and he told her either to get with it or get out, so she got out, and she was coming home, and on the way home, she tripped over a cement mixer. Oh, just terrible, just terrible.
What happened?
Broke her glasses all to smithereens.
That's a shame. Fran Allison, we have a surprise for you on the program right now. We have a recording of the Breakfast Club that I believe you made for the servicemen overseas, and we date it as post-World War II.
Good morning, Aunt Fanny.
Happy Holly Berry to you. Your calendar's kind of slipped the cog again, ain't it?
Yes, but not for those
Christmas
boys.
Christmas in September.
Yeah.
I'm kind of sorry, though, that you've done this.
Oh?
Because now Nettie will start asking me, what are you going to get me for Christmas? And she'll finally get on it so bad that I'll say, none of your blame business.
Yes.
And if you wasn't such a good friend, I wouldn't tell you that much. Nettie would like to have a tape recorder.
Oh.
Yes, because she's getting to where, you know, she hears everything, and she can't remember it.
Oh.
So she'd like to put it down. She goes to beauty shop twice a week. She's a great one to get beauty treatments, you know.
She likes to take
She gets a face full of mud and an ear full of dirt at the same time.
She wants your tape
recorder. She's such a good woman. Yes. No, I don't like to talk about her, you know. She's always trying to make you feel at home, you know, when you come to her house.
Uh-huh.
Which is kind of crazy, because if you wanted to feel at home, you'd have stayed there.
Well, sure, in the first place, yeah.
Does it make sense?
Yes.
And she's always talking about health foods, brain foods, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Fish, you know, she says is a great brain food.
I've heard that.
Have you heard that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it holds up.
Don't you?
No, I've knew people to eat fish all day Friday, and then go out the next day and do the silliest things in the whole world.
Is that so?
It's like people, though, I guess, that sows wild oats all week, and then goes to church on Sunday and hopes for a crop failure. I don't know. Anyway, well, that doesn't make any difference.
No.
But now, do I get this straight? They don't hear this wonderful, great big show of yours until Christmas morning?
This particular one is for Christmas morning.
Well, jing, I'd have time to knit up a pair of socks, wouldn't I?
Sure.
For Nettie's nephew, Throckmorton.
In the service, is he?
Yes, he's over there in Germany.
Oh.
I knit him a pair last year.
Uh-huh.
He never wore them.
Didn't he?
No, and I took a lot of pains with them, too.
Why do you suppose?
Oh, I don't know. Well, there was maybe a few knots here and there where the thread broke and I tied it, you know.
I see.
They was naughty, but they was nice.
Well, yes.
Well, I haven't sewn one of them in for so long, but I'd just get back to
them. I don't know.
And there was a hole in the toe.
With this stuff. I don't know.
So he can get into them from either end.
Oh, open-toed job.
Wouldn't you like to have a pair of socks like that?
Well, sure I would.
fella ought to be pretty bleeding grateful to get a wonderful hand-knit job like that.
I would love a pair of socks.
Well, to heck with him. I'll knit them for you.
Oh, now, don't bother. Don't bother.
We'll talk more with Fran Allison right after this.
Buying a new car in 1972? If so, bank credit may cost you less. At Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, we offer low-cost, convenient auto loans, but we can do more than just put you on the road. We help you establish credit with a bank. We give you cash buyer leverage, and above all, you either start or continue a relationship with a large and progressive mutual savings bank. Once your credit is established, you may want to purchase a new home, improve your existing home, or take a personal loan to finance your trip across the country. Whatever your borrowing needs, it will pay you to start doing business with the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Once an established Burritt customer with good credit, you become a preferred Burritt borrower. So don't wait. Come into any office of the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank.
Fran, you did some commercials, as you indicated earlier, on the various shows, one of which comes to mind, Vic and Sade.
Yes, I did. I did commercials for them. Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting story concerning Vic.
Well,
and Sade.
Vic and Sade. That is Americana personified. Paul Reimer was one of, I think, the most brilliant writers of his time. It was he was a Mark Twain of radio. He was just
That's
fabulous.
A very apt description.
He was just
I think.
Fabulous. The people were so right. Vic was so right, and Sade so dear and so wonderful, and Rush the boy, and Uncle Fletcher.
You know, at this point, this would be a wonderful opportunity for us to hear a bit of Vic and Sade, if that were possible, Ed.
Yes, I'll try to. I'll bring in with all three voices that you mentioned.
Good,
all right,
good.
We'll see what they sound like.
Wonderful.
Mr. Victor Gook and his son, Mr. Rush Gook. The former is established at the library table, busy with some paperwork he's brought home from the office, while the latter, gelatinously athwart the Davenport, somewhat sluggishly glances through a volume of vigorous fiction. And at length, after a silence of considerable duration, one of our friends observes,
"That was a funny train of thought."
"What?"
"I just had a comical train of thought."
"Indeed."
"I've got a chunk of apple stuck on my left cheek, and for the past hour I've been planning to stick my tongue out and snake it in. And just when I got the energy all pumped up to go ahead with the operation, my brain's got all kind of warm and sticky and comfortable, and my muscles relaxed, and I wasn't much more than a half-wit. The sensation lasted for maybe 20 seconds.
"You're recovered now?"
"Yep." "My brain power returned with a rush, and once again I'm a complete half-wit. I mean, I'm a complete whole-wit. Do I mean complete whole-wit? Do I mean complete whole-wit or complete half-wit?" "I'll answer my own question. Complete whole-wit. Naturally, I'm not any complete half-wit. Just an ordinary half-wit." "Hey, what am I talking about?"
"I thought we agreed not to do any talking at all."
"By George, so we did. I forgot."
"It's like this every time I bring homework from the office."
"Well, I'll give you an explanation as to why."
"Why do I bring homework from the office in the first place? I do it because I figure it's quieter here and that I can concentrate better. You know that. You ought to know it, because I've told you 40,000 times. But no, I bring work home from the office and sit down and try to concentrate. And here's my leather-headed son sprawled on the Davenport mumbling nonsense. Consider yourself banished from the house until supper time. Go. We won't talk, we won't argue. We'll simply part on friendly terms and hope that in the future..."
"Can I help it if I bump my head against the back of the Davenport?"
"Why did you bump your head against the back of the Davenport?"
"I was starting to get up and go away, as you directed. But the minute I stepped on this foot that's been asleep, I began to collapse. And my body lurched crazily at a 45-degree angle, upsetting my equilibrium and causing me to hurtle helplessly."
"Listen, somebody's in the kitchen."
"Oh, Sadie."
"Uncle Fletcher."
"Oh, my."
"Hello, Sadie."
"He's coming in. You might as well answer."
"Hello, Uncle Fletcher."
"Well, Vic, honey, old boy.
I bring homework from the office because I figure it'll be quiet and I can concentrate.
Vic, I bet you brought work home from the office. Am I right? If I'm right, let it go. If I'm wrong, don't say a word. Rush, there's a morsel of something on your cheek, Apple.
Fine. You going someplace, Uncle Fetcher?
No.
I asked because I noticed you're carrying your valise.
Why, yes. I forgot. A numbskull fathead valise completely slipped my mind. I am going someplace.
Where are you going?
Here.
I see.
I'm going here.
You are here.
Who is here?
You are.
I am here.
Sure you're here.
This is no place for the tiny tots, Rush, honey. Go down cellar.
I brought work home from the office so I could have it quiet and concentrate.
I am in open rebellion against my landlady.
Has Mrs. Keller laid down the law?
Mrs. Keller has overstepped the mark. Mrs. Keller has piled on the straw that broke the camel's back. Mrs. Keller, like the needle's eye, has torn the serpent's tooth from the ungrateful child.
Well, what'd your landlady do?
What'd my landlady do? That's rich. What my landlady do? That's rich.
Here's Mamo.
What my landlady do, you say?
No, I say here's Mamo.
That's rich.
Was that in there with you, Uncle Fletcher?
Yeah. And me, Ma.
Are you being distracted from your work, Dick?
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Uncle Fletcher.
Lady, honey, conditions at the establishment where I maintain accommodations have become intolerable.
You've had another run-in with your landlady, huh?
I have had a terrible run-in with my landlady.
And you want to stay here a few days?
I may want to stay here a week.
Well, you know that won't work, Uncle Fletcher. You know Miss Keller always comes and gets you and makes you go back home.
You know what Miss Keller has done this trip, lady?
No, but let's go out in the backyard and discuss it.
My landlady, Miss Keller, is leaving tonight for a visit with her brother, Charlie.
Well, let's go outdoors and sit in the nice breeze and talk. Then Vic can go ahead with his work.
My landlady, Miss Keller, plans to be gone until next Tuesday afternoon. 5 days she plans to be gone. And you want to know what she's done?
Not until you and I and Rush are outdoors sitting on the back steps.
He's laid out my meals for me.
Well, I don't believe I quite understand just what you mean by that, Uncle Fletcher.
My meals. She's laid them all out for me to eat. Landlady is away in Ohio visiting her half-wit brother. I will take my suppers downtown because in the evening my sister requires hot food. But the rest of my meals, my breakfast, my dinner, my landlady has got distributed all over the numbskull house. Adds up to 10 meals all told. You see, there's breakfast and dinner tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. That's 8. And breakfast and dinner on Tuesday is 2 more. She gets back home Tuesday afternoon. 10 meals all told. And them meals is distributed all over the fathead house.
What in thunder are you talking about, Uncle Fletcher?
My meals. I expect you know what meals is.
I have a rough idea, but I
wouldn't... I know what he means.
Go down, cellar.
Who are you talking to?
Rush, go down, cellar.
No.
Listen, I'm trying to tell you people something.
Well, you better try to tell her without yelling.
My tomorrow morning's breakfast, Miss Keller has got laid out all neat and appetizing for me at home on the kitchen table.
Well, what's the matter with that?
But you listen.
Sure.
Like tomorrow's dinner, she's got set out on the dining room table, covered with a napkin and looking mighty tasty.
Well, I don't see what you object to in that. I don't
keep
see
out
what's
of it,
on.
Willie.
Saturday's breakfast is on the library table in the living room. Saturday's dinner is on the numbskull sideboard. And Monday's dinner is perched like a numbskull parrot on the doggone fathead piano stool. Tuesday's breakfast.
Well, are you complaining?
What?
Because
Miss Keller went on a visit and stayed a year. Would she leave a year's meal strewed around the house? How many days in a year, Rush?
365.
What's twice 365?
I don't know.
Around 700?
Yeah.
How'd you like to have 700 meals cluttering up every available chair, table, piano stool, windowsill, sideboard, buffet, dresser?
Oh, yes, Uncle
Fletcher. Listen, I'm the fathead that pays the rent, ain't I?
Yes, and Miss Keller is the fathead that owns the house.
I'll show Mrs. Keller that I have been a postponing up.
I bet you don't show Miss Keller nothing. And I bet Miss Keller will be over here directly and chew you on home.
Sure, she'll be here directly. I'm surprised she's not here now. Lady, honey, when she arrives, I'm going to show her I am a violent man.
Yeah?
I'm going to kick your front porch railing to smithereens.
Yeah?
You're going to have a terrible fit of temper and do that?
Yes. Have you any objections, Vic, honey?
None in the world. In fact, I'm interested.
So am I. Let us all step out on the front porch. Miss Keller should arrive any moment.
Are you coming, Dick?
You bet you're right.
Well, what about the work you brought home from the office?
Oh, this is better. After you, Rush.
Well, Fran, you did a lot of commercial work while you were in in Chicago. You appeared as Aunt Fanny and, of course, as a staff vocalist. Did you ever appear as a dramatic actress on shows?
I did on some occasions. I don't really remember what there were. There were so many shows done out of Chicago.
Of course, a lot of soap operas came from
Chicago.
Oh,
heavens, that was the birth of the soap operas.
All of which leads us up to that program with which you're most closely associated today and for the last 20 years, I guess, Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
This year is our 25th anniversary. Isn't that awful? Hardly a man is still alive. Well, during the war years, there had been only one television station in Chicago, per se, and it was owned by B&K Theaters.
Balaban and Katz.
Balaban and Katz. But during the war, it was taken over by the Navy, and it was a radar school. When it was returned to private ownership, people began to think of it as a new and fabulous form of advertising. And one of the big, who in the world doesn't know Marshall Field and Company?
That's right.
They decided to buy a half hour in the evening, and Don McNeil was to be the star of it. Now, I adore Don McNeil. I love him with a passion, and we're the greatest of friends. But I know that he doesn't like to have to study anything and memorize it. He did Breakfast Club for 35 years off the top of his head, and so I knew that's how he operated. So he was now the star of the show, and I said to my husband, I hope and pray that he doesn't drag me into one of these things, because I know how bad they'll be. Well, I got by for about 3 weeks, and then I got the call. So they were going to, it was just about Thanksgiving time, and they were going to do this melodrama. And the name of it was, That Turkey Is Too Darned High. Now, that should tell you right there the kind of a thing it was. And I was to be this poor orphan girl whose house was about to be snatched from over her head by this wicked sheriff who was Don McNeil and his equally villainous helper, Sam. And I was sitting at this table weeping because the sheriff was going to come and I wasn't going to be able to pay. And so I said, well, you fellows haven't learned a line. I know you haven't. Don said, don't you worry about a thing. He said, they have them. They tell me the cues are all in their hats. So I was seated at this table and I cried. It seemed to me I cried for a half an hour. And not a word did they speak. Came in the door, but not a word. Didn't look in their hats. I said, I presume you've come for the rent. They both nodded. They didn't even say yes. That was in their hat. Yes, I know it was written in their hat. Well, I cried for another 25 minutes, and finally I said, well, I haven't got it. Well, it was so awful. It was just horrible. And I went through about three or four of those. So one afternoon, Captain Eddie called me, and he said, Fran, he said, how would you like to do a television show? Well, I remembered. And I said, Captain, I just don't really believe I am interested. And he said, Fran, this is like for money and all that. I said, why don't we talk it over?
That makes a difference.
And so I said, tell me a little bit more about it. Well, he said, Bert Telstrom is going to do it. And Kukla and Ollie said, Kukla and Ollie. And, I did, of course. Not well, but I had met them, and I was a great admirer of Burr's artistry. And so he said, Burr thinks if he could get someone to work in front of the stage that it would be easier to do an hour a day, 5 days a week. I said, well, I would think so. So I went down the next day, and the advertising agency was there, and all the people were out from Camden, and we discussed what we'd do because we were going to sell television through television, but they wanted to aim it at children. So we agreed that it certainly would be well worth a try, and we each went our own ways over the weekend. I went down to the studio. on Monday afternoon at 2 o'clock, met Bird. We went to the drugstore and had some coffee and talked about what we would do. Went on the air at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And from that point, we worked 10 years.
Hmm.
It started out to be the Junior Jamboree, and that didn't seem to make much sense. And so it just became Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Was that, yeah, that was the name that certainly everyone remembered about the show.
And our greatest followers were people from the arts, people I at whose shrine I trembled, and came to know them as good and wonderful friends. And of course, the press was always so kind to us, so good to us. And we even did Kukla, Fran, and Ollie on radio for one season.
Now, this was about 1950,
Fran? Yes, it would have been. Mm-hmm. We did it in the early afternoon, and I used to just love it. And I remember this one day, because it allowed us to do things of which, of course, we couldn't physically do.
Right.
Ollie's mother comes to visit us. She's from Vermont, you know, and she was cooking. And so she was making these cookies, and so I said to her, Mrs. Dragon, do you always put string beans in your cookies? And she said, no, said Dad, only when watermelon isn't in season. So now the favorite thing now we have is the string bean cookies. We always tremble when Mrs. Dragon comes to visit. But it allowed us to do real, you know, wonderful things. We could go places which, of course, we couldn't go. Although in the last series that we did for NET, it was possible electronically to do a thing. We had Christmas. We had all the Kukla Powhatans singing Christmas carols. And, you know, electronically we could pop up two at a time until we had the whole group singing.
Oh,
and it was
right,
just great.
Are,
it was
yeah.
wonderful.
And basically was the show ad-libbed on television?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, entirely.
You had an outline, I suppose.
We had an outline. Many times, maybe something happened in the papers that was of current when we were doing it. And we did it live, you know, that 10 years. And maybe it was something that happened at my house or at Burr's that we could translate into Kuklapolitan experiences. So it was great fun.
So your whole career has been one of
off
the top
of
your head, huh? no scripts ever,
no.
Huh?
Fran, what are you doing in your present spare time, if you have any spare time?
Well, over a period of about 15 years now, I have worked quite closely with the National Association of Mental Health and with the National American Cancer Society. When I say worked with them, I have made a great many trips for them to all parts of the country. I go out as kind of a thank you, kind of a talking telegram for the national offices, saying thank you to the volunteers in the different areas for the wonderful work they are doing, and it simply draws the attention of the community to the work which is being done by all too few, and in which they could have an active contributing part, you know.
Well, I'm sure that that's greatly valued by them. Fran Allison, it's been great fun visiting with you, and I thank you so much for sharing your marvelous career with us.
Well, a lot of fun the two of you must have. I think that's great. All kinds of good luck to you.
Thank you, Fran Allison. This is Dick Bertel.
This is Ed Cochran.
Good night.
Tonight's edition of the Golden Age of Radio was brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank and WTIC. Studio engineer Bob Sherago. The program was edited and produced by Brian Hartnett.
Pepper Young's Family. The story of your friends, the Youngs, is brought to you by Camel.